AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Barbara and Declan are here.
Hello.
To spread some Yuletide cheer and all that kind of stuff.
To bring some what?
Yuletide cheer.
Yuletide?
Yes. What do you think I said?
Yuletide. I don't know. Yuletide.
I don't know what she said.
I don't know.
Kind Yuletide. Of mules. Yeah.
Is that when Yuletide. You act the ass?
What?
Sorry.
Okay. Oh, acting the ass. Very good. Yeah, I got that as well. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
I spent ages thinking that one.
That's very good, Declan.
Here's your first question. I was married to a man who was initially lovely, but then mentally abused me and later also our children. With the help of Women's Aid, we were able to move on without him. He drank a few nights a week before that, but then he really started drinking. The children, now adults, distanced themselves because of this behaviour, and so did his siblings. As a result of his drinking, he's in very poor health, and we're starting to think about what will happen when he passes away. Funerals, of course, are an important part of our community, and everybody attends to show their respect. And herein lies the problem. I don't want to shake hands with all those people and be told sorry for your troubles. My troubles were years ago and they were over when he was gone. I do not want to stay away either. I want to say my farewell too, and of course I want to support my kids, but we're not sure we can stand by for a traditional funeral.
Well, this is an interesting letter, actually, and highlights a situation that I'm sure has been faced by many families before in a situation like this. And so I applaud this woman for thinking ahead and for thinking about what's going to happen when her ex dies and the funeral and all the rest of it. You know, one of the good things about Ireland now is that we have a choice in how we can celebrate or mark big life events, whether it's weddings or births or funerals or whatever. You know, there was a day when it had to be a Catholic funeral and that was it. There was no other alternative.
Sure.
Or a Church of Ireland or whatever. But now that's not the case anymore. And I'm not sure from the letter if the ex's parents are still alive or are still in the picture. I'm assuming they're not because she only mentions the siblings. But by from what she says, it sounds like all of the close family are of a similar mind. In other words, they've all stood back from this man.
Yeah.
And so they're probably all of a similar mind. And I think in this, I think in all instances, actually, I think planning your funeral is a very good idea. But I think in this instance, thinking ahead and trying to put a kind of even an outline plan in place is a very, very good idea. You know, so she needs to talk to the siblings, to her kids, and maybe decide not to have a church funeral. Because, you know, once you go down that route, there are certain things you have to, certain boxes you have to tick. Although you don't have to do a eulogy, so that's good if you don't want to, as far as I understand. But you can do a humanist, like a very pared back kind of like quick humanist-y type of service where, you know, you can kind of pay respect without, you know, given having to go through a whole load of things that would feel very uncomfortable for them. Or
God, that sounds even worse, actually.
Because does it?
No, well, because the humanist will have to say, well, tell us something about him, and I have to say something positive about them.
No.
Whereas, you know, the priest, they always stand up. I've never met this person, so I say, God was very important to them, you know, and it's pro forma, and everybody knows
goes. Now, I don't have a lot of experience in this because even though I have absolutely no time for the Catholic Church, I have already let my entire family know that I want a Catholic funeral because I like the whole ritual and the incense and angels. I know all that I like, so I'm having all of that, please.
Yeah.
But I was only at, I think, one proper, like, kind of humanist-y type of thing. And it was very short and very sweet. And the eulogies, such as they were very short, like, really very short.
You know
short.
Who do great funerals? Baptists. In
do
America.
They?
Because
there's
always like, they have a woman and she's like playing the organ constantly, kind of riffing on the organ. Then everybody takes turns to go up and tell a story about the deceased.
But you see, that's what they don't want to do.
And this woman's kind of, you know, playing.
Thinking. It's kind of like,
you know, she's kind of ad-libbing along to the story. It's really.
So that's where you're going.
No, that's where I'm going.
That's where you're going.
I'm going to become.
That sounds very Vegas.
It is kind of Vegas. I'm going to identify as a Black American and change religion.
I'm going to find out
about that. Social media is okay. Do you know what I mean? Because they're looking at that now.
Do you have to? Is it a legal requirement to put a death in RIP?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because I'm wondering...
It's like usually the undertakers who do that.
Because it strikes me her trouble is people coming and happen to be hypocritical about it to those people.
Well, I mean, she's not going to be able to stop, no matter which type of funeral she has. I mean, even if I say it's a Catholic funeral, you should be able to exert some control over it. In other words, you know, you don't have to bring up the gift symbolising his life at the beginning. Yeah. You don't have to do a eulogy. You, as you say, Sean, you can just do the prayers and the bits and the whatever and have it all over with. I don't think she can stop people in the village coming up and saying, I'm sorry for your trouble. That's probably going to happen regardless of what type of funeral.
Yeah.
But having said that also, if this guy is, as she describes him, and has been drinking a lot, I would say a lot of people, and it is a small village, I'd say a lot of people in the village know. So, you know, it mightn't be as much as she thinks it's going to be. But I can't see that she's going to do, I can't see she's going to be able to avoid that because people go into automatic pilot at funerals. And that's just the pat thing that they say.
And one of the strangely reassuring things about, you know, a religious funeral, even for those of us who are not really interested in the religious aspect, is that over years and years and years and centuries and millennia, it's kind of been dovetailed into this kind of very perfect form of what it does, what it's meant to do, which is that it kind of hits almost subconsciously. It kind of covers all of the things that this letter has brought up, which is there's a way of marking the closure that's required, because it's such a weird moment when somebody dies that you just go, well, you know, you need to have something. So this lady has realized that even though I don't want to do certain parts of the performance side of it, personally, she wants to have her own respects. Yeah. You know, she wants to just mark that in some way as a kind of a, you know, respect might be a bit of a stretch in this context, but it's definitely putting the matter to bed in that way. And that's a kind of a closure aspect. But then, of course, then there's the ritualistic side of things that is to do with other people coming together as a community to kind of also do that. And it provides closure for them as well. And I think what risks happening here is that by not giving the community a chance to mark that closure for them, particularly in a small village where I would doubt they have access to a humanist service that's easily organised.
You can import them though. They're
Do the humanists travel?
But I mean, you could just get a celebrant. Comes and does a whatever in
a
local
venue,
hall.
But then it becomes this more elaborate, you know, then you're putting on a thing. Whereas in a church, it's just more, you know, people kind of know what it is and they kind of, you know, and, you know, there doesn't have to be the thing the day before. Because the thing about it in country communities as well is that the night before and then the funeral, there's a whole thing around that that's different.
But you don't have to do all of that. I mean, you don't have to do all of that anymore.
But I think that's sometimes you're expected to.
Well, actually, because, you know, the way I said that, you know, the priests always more or less say the same thing. We did get a text in.
From a priest.
From a priest.
Oh, good.
As a priest listener, Sean, you are totally wrong.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Not every priest says that God was very important to the deceased. We talk with and listen to the family and go from there.
Actually, so, my experience within my family would bear that out. And I thought got lucky that we had a good priest.
Just my experience, they always kind of mention God at some point because, you know.
And
but I look forward, priest listener, to Barbara Scully's funeral while you'll stand up and say she had absolutely no time for the Catholic Church.
Oh,
here's a list of the reasons why. Now we'll have prayers of the faithful.
Will you pass me all these details, sir?
You have to change your name.
Come on, Brad. I have my own pet priest.
I'm sure the Catholic Church has buried many hypocrites in its day. Don't worry.
Many hypocrites.
Yeah, exactly.
So from that point of view. But I do think that, you know, as a community, we don't like to think about death and we don't like to face that. So that's one of the really kind of good things that the religious ritual does is that it just comes in there at that moment.
It gives you a formula.
Which is kind of traumatic for a lot of people, and it kind of clips in
and takes over.
And the priests, regardless, again, they do a really good job at that particular moment, I think, in just helping
some do
people.
And some don't. Yeah, some do what like Sean everything. Says. And just
put it this way. I think they are shown how to do a really good job. Whether they themselves acquit themselves in that way is up to them personally. But I think in general, I can't believe I'm saying this, supporting all of the religions. But in my experience,
there's a halo starting to form over your head now as you're speaking.
But for me personally, I wouldn't like to be buried as a hypocrite, Barbara. I'd like to be.
Who said I was getting buried?
I'm getting buried on here right now.
Yeah.
But for this particular family, I think it's kind of a really difficult situation where you go, I don't want our laundry aired in public. I think the priests are well used to finding a way to
around that.
I think the shaking hands with the community as they come in, if it's normally done that happens on the mass, you know, the removals, then just don't have that. Don't have one. For make
most people don't have removals
more people
anymore.
Tend
that's
to come
the one
to
where they
now.
All come in and shake their hands.
Most people don't have removals now.
I do. No, because there's no priests.
You don't need to get a priest.
Oh yeah, but you don't even need a priest for that bit. You can just have them in the funeral home.
Oh, just down the funeral home.
Yeah, and then that's where the people queue up and do, you know,
That's true.
Because
but
it's
again,
outside of work. So
you don't have to do that.
No.
There's no necessity.
For a lot of people, particularly down the country,
is that
because of work and everything that they all come in and the community kind of expects that of them to all come in. They come in en masse. The whole gig is just to come in and the job is to come in and shake the hand and leave. And if you don't want that, well then you just kind of cut
don't
that particular.
Have that. Yeah, exactly.
Now, a lot of people are making the point that she's the ex-wife, so it's kind of not up to her, that it's up to the kids and the siblings to arrange what the funeral is going to be like. And she's just a guest at it.
Oh, okay.
This about her own particular feeling of not wanting the whole, you know, is she the ex-wife or are they separated?
Is this all privacy issue rather than...
But you're going to have mixed feelings when he dies, of course, you know.
And she doesn't want to, I'd say, like, she's been a good mammy here. She doesn't want to leave it all on the shoulders of the kids if it's a bit awkward. So she's trying to give them all a bit of a steer. I think the fact that she's thinking about this is great. And, you know, I don't think it's as problematic as she thinks it might be. I think, you know, the only thing she may have to put up with is people saying, I'm sorry for your trouble. And I can't see any way around that. Because that's just the pat thing that people say.
Yeah. No removal. You know? Have that funeral.
Have the funeral.
At 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning when people can't come.
We'd like the basic level. No frills, no frills.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Next question. Now, this will sound a bit long on the radio. It was actually a PhD length when it was sent into us. But here it goes anyway. I'm a man in my 30s using dating apps. I've been lucky enough to go on dates with some nice women, also in their 30s, over the past couple of years. We've all had very pleasant dates, things would appear promising. Ultimately, I hit a sticking point when things got up and running because I'm not very close with my family, and being family-oriented is a core value for all the women I've met recently. I guess I come from a less loving family background because my parents aren't the warm, loving types. My siblings may have developed a way to insulate themselves from this, and they're a bit detached emotionally as a result. I'm a kind and caring person, emotionally intelligent. I'm interested in having a family if I meet someone. If I were to be lucky enough to have children, I'd love and care for them. It would make me proud. I wouldn't go the complete opposite of my childhood. I love my family because it's the only one I'll ever have, and I respect who they are. But long story short, my upbringing was more like a house share with blood relatives. With the last three women I've dated, I've always tried to play things down when the topic came up about being family-oriented. They all express they're very family-oriented and can't be without with someone who doesn't share their values. It's like they're all part of a cult and they've been brainwashed to say the same thing. I actually do share this value, it's just I haven't shared this experience. My parents are my best friends, is a statement, sends chills down my spine now, despite how lovely a sentiment it is. As it stands, I'm totally lost as to what being a family-oriented means in this day and age. And is it an issue in my dating life? What should I do?
Wow. There's a lot. I mean, there literally was a lot in this letter. And I think I'm going to boil it down to the idea that aside from the background thing, you know, I thought of that Dostoevsky quote where it's like all happy families are the same, but every unhappy family is different, is unhappy in its own way. And I think
so smart, isn't
I'm
he?
So, oh, yeah. I'm yeah. So,
he's so,
so
smart.
Yeah, I am so smart.
I wish I could drop Dostoevsky, whatever you call him, into my answers or other philosophers.
I was
going to
drop in the original Russian, but I did decide.
Oh, yeah.
I'm impressed.
But the bottom line of it is that's kind of a funny thing to say because, you know, all families the same and are all happy families the same or all whatever. The bottom line of it is for this guy, he's coming at a situation where he's thinking that everybody that he meets is the same and he's the only person who has the unique kind of experience in his life because his family weren't that warm or loving or whatever. And then the other part of the conversation is about what women in the, his instance, mean when they say, oh, you know, I'm family oriented? What does that mean? Because I think that he is deciding what it means. He's deciding that everybody who says it to him means the same thing. And he's kind of turning it into this kind of a culture war kind of a label instead of, you know, standing his ground and actually, you know, interrogating the term with these people and going, well, what do you mean by that? And what exactly does that mean to you? And why is it important to you? Because I think most women, when they're starting to get to know men, they're kind of like quizzing them. They're trying to find out exactly who this guy is, what his values are, what this could mean for us in a long-term relationship, you know. And it's a kind of way of filtering out the chaff from the wheat in that kind of way. And he's kind of, you know, in his head gone, he's letting himself become chaff because of the way that he's answering the question. And then he's kind of getting angry because he believes that he hasn't been given a fair hearing, when in fact, he's then saying, I do have the same values as these people. So it seems like it's a communication problem rather than an actual background issue. Does that make sense?
I agree with what you've said. I mean, when I read this letter first, the truncated version, I was like, what is he on about? I was kind of getting a bit annoyed and thinking he's overthinking this in a huge way. But actually, when I thought about it a little bit, it seems to me that he feels he is completely on the back foot as regards family relationships and how families operate, because he's aware of the fact that his family operated in an emotionally maybe stagnant or kind of cold
way. Then he's blaming the people that he's talking to for it. And it's like, the way I would boil it down would be, it's like it's a cultural thing. He's coming in a situation where everybody else is kind of a similar culture and he's coming from a different culture.
Yeah.
And he's getting angry with them because of the cultural differences, when he has to do a little bit of work of explaining that while his actual immediate family history mightn't be, you know, the softest, or the consequence of it might be that there's a few broken or kind of cool relations, that doesn't mean that he is himself broken or that is cold. But he could be.
But I agree that it doesn't mean that he is like that. But I do think that women, when you're looking at a partner, a potential partner, how they get on with their family is very often a bellwether that you will use in order to, which, you know, maybe right.
Which is really ironic, because that often then what they'll do is that they'll spend most of the energy of their family unit bringing their family unit into their own family rather than spending time with the in-laws, because that's what people do naturally as well. So it's kind of like, I find that a bit, you know, I can see this guy's point.
I remember being in school, in junior school. We had a great teacher in junior school, and she gave us loads of wisdom. But one of the pearls of wisdom I remember being taught, probably in fifth class, was that if you want to see how a man is going to treat you in the future, look at how he treats his mother.
Yeah.
And that was best interest, but we were told that. Mm. And it's something that kind of has always sat in my mind. And I think that's what this guy is picking up on. The fact that women are judging him because of the fact that he clearly
doesn't... Because of his mother.
He doesn't have close relationships with his mother or his father or maybe his siblings as well. And that people are seeing that. So I get that. I think initially I thought, he's overthinking it, like, you know. But I actually can understand how he feels a little bit on the back foot. I think personally that he is in his head still trying to come to terms with his upbringing by comparison, perhaps to these women who he's going out with. And maybe he needs to talk to somebody who'll just build up his confidence and say, just because you were brought up that way doesn't mean you are that way. Doesn't mean that you will repeat the pattern.
And when you talk about the confidence as well, I feel that this letter is focusing down on a label or a concept, when in reality it's just a guy struggling with dating in general. And he's seeing this and he's making this the problem, because in some way, as you mentioned, he has a history of stuff that happened to him where, you know, it's not necessarily an open wound, but it has had long-term consequences.
Exactly.
And the consequences to him are practical consequences, where he feels that his own family dynamic and relations aren't the same as what he believes the Hallmark card version of family relationships should be. And most people, when they're wanting to build relationships as well, think they want that for themselves in the future.
Yeah.
So he's coming at it kind of going, well, I haven't got the track record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither have these women, really, because, you know, they might have great looking families, but.
Now you're looking at him going, okay, down the road, this guy came from a very cold family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you learn things
from
your family just by seeing them operate. if we get married and have kids, will he be cold to our children as well?
Yeah.
Which is why I said about the culture thing, then he has a responsibility to openly discuss this with them. If that's the conversation, he needs to be saying, because in the letter he says he doesn't do this, which is where he goes, oh, I don't get on that well with my family. We were a bit cold growing up, but I'm not like that.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be an extension of an awareness.
The thing that the red flag that I think why he maybe needs to talk to somebody about it is where he said he feels like all of these women that he has so far have been dating, they're all like they're part of a cult and they've been brainwashed. And I think that's what to me is like, you need to talk to somebody about this.
You're blaming
because
them.
Because you're blaming the wrong people. And as I say, you know, you aren't necessarily going to do what your parents did, especially as you're aware of it. But I think you might need a little bit of more professional help in order to kind of work that out and tease that out.
Yeah. A lot of people texting in to say, though, that Declan is wrong.
About what?
All happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way, was Tolstoy, not Dostoevsky.
Oh, okay. Thank you,
Anna Karenina.
You're right.
Oh, he's mortal.
Oh, sorry, but in Russian when you pronounce it.
Easy. Yeah.
I was thinking in Russian, which means that they lie and they cheat.
He's got scarlet.
Declan Buckley, the Russian asset.
I was ready to the studio.
My daughter's in third class and her teacher is absolutely rubbish. All the parents agree on this. Her spelling, her maths and her Irish have all got worse since this fella started teaching them. He's a sub covering maternity leave. He basically doesn't bother teaching them at all, but instead spins them yarns. He told them that he was a county hurler, but we checked that out and it was a lie. He said Michael D. Higgins was his uncle, which isn't true either. Last week, a daughter came home and said that when the school year is over, the teacher is going to America to train to be an astronaut. Usually the parents chip in to get the teacher a voucher for Christmas, but a lot of us feel we shouldn't reward this bad behaviour. But the kids love them because they believe all this spoofery. Are we damaging our kids by letting this go on?
I love this letter and I love this teacher.
I kind of like him too.
I love this teacher. Like, I mean, first of all, third class, relax. Do you know what I mean? Relax, the cacks, for God's sake. He's not going to send them all into needing kind of remedial help when they go into fourth class. This teacher is clearly a great storyteller and has got an amazing imagination.
But not a great teacher, though.
Not a great teacher, but like there's lots of not great teachers who don't have other assets or other advantages that he does. Mm. He mightn't be a great teacher, but he's teaching them the power of your imagination, the power of creativity, the power of storytelling.
Okay.
And all of that is really important in a world that we live in today when kids are completely, you know, or hopefully not in third class, but coming down the tracks, you know, will be completely engrossed in their phones and all that kind of stuff. This guy is getting them to sit down and explore amazing stories that clearly aren't real. I mean, what kind of parents go and check it out, whether he was a county for hurler or whatever it was? Like, seriously.
I know, but you can imagine somebody came home and then the father says, what's his name again? No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then you get the bit between you. The thing is, though, if the kids are believing it, is that damaging
at all? No, it's not damaging. God almighty, we all allow our children to read fairy tales about the
can
big
we just
bad wolf
point
and
out
everything
that
else.
The same, you know, pearl-clutching mammies and daddies are simultaneously telling their children
all sorts of stuff.
That's the entire
truth.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Declan was just going to spew more Russian propaganda there.
I think the fact that this teacher has entertained them and kept them happy is hugely important.
I think it's brilliant.
It's a huge advantage.
I do also think that when it comes to, like, you know, it comes to going to school and school being a kind of formative, happy experience.
Yeah.
These kind of teachers, while they mightn't be able to give you the correct author of
spelling
a particular
and,
quote,
yeah.
they will
get the spirit of it.
The spirit
yes.
of Christmas.
Yes, yeah. indeed.
And you know, it is Christmas time, you know.
And you're rewarding, you know, unless it's changed since my day, which was a long time ago, but putting a fiver in for a teacher's present.
Oh, it's gone mad now. Apparently they're, you know.
Mad more than that.
Like, Well, like, if there's like, depends how many kids are, like,
well,
if people are chipping in.
Well, there's 40 kids in a class.
Yeah, so like, everybody chips in 20 quid or something.
20 quid?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Up. It's nuts. Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Some teachers have like a list of Brown Thomas.
Like a wedding list. Yeah, here's my school teacher list.
Here's my list.
This fellow will want an astronaut outfit, a new Hurley.
Yeah. As a primary teacher myself, God, all the professions are getting in touch today.
Great.
As a primary teacher myself, I can tell you that this teacher sounds fantastic.
Exactly.
He has the children entertained and focused, and there is an awful lot more to education than spelling tests, etc.
Exactly.
Although to some parents, this seems to be the, all that is important.
Yes.
I know, but you'd hope they could spell. Oh my God, how wonderful that he is teaching the students to use their imagination.
Yes.
I'm a teacher. Believe me, the system is broken.
Yes.
Let the kids enjoy him.
Exactly.
They're so lucky. Don't tell the kids to stop being so negative.
Exactly.
When years later, when they're reading Walter Mitty or something like that, they'll go, oh, I had a teacher once like
He'll
Walter.
He'll be the teacher they'll remember.
Yeah.
He'll be the teacher they will remember when they're adults. Go,
yeah,
we had
that's
this
true.
Gas teacher who told us the greatest stories.
Dead Poets Society, they'll all be going, that was the one.
Here he goes again with his arts and culture references.
There he is,
I'm just throwing them all at people.
He's throwing them all out there. Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much. Yeah, you can swan off to the Abbey now, wherever you're off to.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.